where movies were never safe to begin with, and the truth is stranger than fiction. Starring Moral Bob, Drew Misson,
and Ryan Dean.
Conspiracy Theater 3000.
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
Something given has no value.
Well, I got a couple of thousand goddamn questions, you know?
The world ain't what it seems, is it, Gunny?
I want to speak to someone in charge.
The moment you think you got it figured, you're wrong.
And force, my friends, is violent.
They've been studying us for years, finding out our weaknesses!
I want to lodge a complaint.
You're safe and alive. You're already dead, everybody.
They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices.
The world is a business.
You have no right to make people crazy.
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
How come I know so much?
Their intention to rule rests with the annihilation of consciousness.
What the hell is going on around here? Who are you people?
They are safe as long as they are not discovered. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Conspiracy Theater 3000. It has been a hot minute since we got back together on this show. Unfortunately, life throws things at us, throws a few curveballs. Unfortunately, Bob could not be with us here today. You know, Bob's got some family stuff going on, and we all wish him well in this time. And, you know, Bob's an integral part of this show, and we really didn't think we could do a show this month without him. But Ghost was able to step up to the plate. He's joining us today, a friend of the show, a friend of both Ryan and I. Welcome, Ghost. You are our fill-in man. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. I have big shoes to fill in with you know, Moral Bob being out and what have you. And yeah, it was an honor. You know, Ryan reached out to me last night. We set this up. So, hey, let's do it. And I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
Now, Ryan, this is a show that's quite late now, but I think it's quite ironic because there's a bit of a saying around here. The Irish are pretty backwards at times anyway. So to be late with a St. Patrick's Day kind of themed episode, I don't think it's too bad. A shout out to my Irish buddy, Brian. This one's for you, you Mick bastard.
Are you Irish too?
I've got a mix of Irish in me somewhere along the lines. So yeah, it kind of works
out. I would believe that. I actually do too, if you could believe that. A significant part of me is actually Irish. I'm actually more Irish than I am Mexican, which would really disappoint Ghost.
Got that black Irish in you, brother.
Yeah, something. But it's a cool culture.
It is. It's a great grounded little culture that, you know, it seems like a lot of other like ethnic groups, but for white people, they're very based. They're all about family, great food, great drink, and they're a good time. So why wouldn't anyone want to celebrate St. Patrick's Day? It's a perfect holiday to get loaded, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How about you now, guys? Have you got any Irish in your veins?
Don't. I'm Scottish.
Well, you know, so am I, but Scottish is close enough.
Yeah. And the crazy Irish, you know, they hope gain Scotland's freedom. So, you know, can't go wrong there.
I got to ask, too, do you do both you guys, I know the answer with Ghost. We talk about food a lot on our show. Do you, Drew, do like the corned beef and cabbage and stuff like that for St. Patrick's Day?
I don't do the cabbage. And corned beef over here is, we call it red gum or silver side. It's pretty much the same type of thing. It's like the meat that's soaked in like a vinegar type of boil, and it's served up that way. It's very similar to a corned beef, but
you guys are kooky over there. You always got little kooky fun names. You call a grilled cheese, what do you call a grilled cheese?
A toasty.
A toasty.
Sounds like a sex act to Americans, right? A toasty.
Yeah, it sounds a little weird, but hey. I mean, I love the Australian accent, and I think that what it was too with, because Bob was saying that he doesn't like girls with an Australian accent. I couldn't disagree more. I think that women with Australian accents, I think it's hot. I don't know what it is, but I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things about Australian women, in my humble opinion.
Well, this is what makes the St. Patrick's Day connection with Australians so important. The majority of convicts that were sent here were either Irish or Scotch. So our accent is actually a derivative of those accents, and our first currency being rum. So we're loaded all the time in our infancy as a country. So that's why we've got this slurred speech at the best of times.
Well, yeah, and it's that's what's kind of funny too. I actually didn't know that it was an Irish thing, but I thought it was mostly England, you know, because the Australian accent's like it's almost English sounding. If you're not very good at doing accents, you're trying to do an Australian accent, it's gonna sound English, right? So it's just one of those things. But yeah, man, Ireland's veins run deep all around the world, man. We got an Irish president, Irish Catholic president over here in the United States, that hero, Joe Biden, right? So, you know, just interesting.
Oh, and what a hero he is. I'd be remiss if I didn't throw out a St. Paddy's Day joke. Are you ready, guys?
Oh, I'd love him.
Mm-hmm. Why did the leprechaun use 3 condoms?
I don't know. Why did the leprechaun use 3 condoms?
To be sure.
Oh, boy. That is a good Irish dad joke right there. To be sure.
And on that note, let's get into it, guys. We've got a St. Paddy's Day film. Great one. It kind of blew the world up at the time. It had some controversy around it for things that were happening in the world in America. So it ended up becoming more of a cult classic than it did a big hit film in its day. And we are talking about Boondock Saints, the 1999 action film written and directed by Troy Duffy, which presents a story about two twin brothers who are Irish Catholic, Connor and Murphy. Tired of the crime overrunning the streets of Boston, they're inspired by the faith to cleanse their hometown of evil with their own brand of zealous vigilante justice. As they hunt down and kill one notorious gangster after another, they become controversial folk heroes in the community. But Paul Smecker, played by Willem Dafoe, an eccentric FBI agent, is fast closing in on their blood-soaked trail.
Wow. Now, when I'm black and white now. When after you looked away, now I'm black and white. When this movie came out, man, I don't know if I saw it right when it came out, but I watched it on like repeat for a little while, man. It was so good. And, you know, I love, you know, the Irish culture, as we were kind of alluding to earlier, and like the drinking and just like how it's set around St. Patrick's Day and these two badass dudes that are like vigilantes, right? Like it was everything about it was really cool to me, real gritty. Right. Like it's just a badass movie, man. I don't know where you guys were when you first watched it, but I loved the damn movie when I first saw it.
Yeah, I liked it myself.
Yeah, keep going, guys. I was just about to say that I was in high school at the time, early high school, and first time I'd watched it was probably a year or so after it had come out. And it was new. It seemed like it was an action film that wasn't over the top 80s or 90s action. It seemed attainable for the real average person. What they were doing didn't seem too far out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 100%. Just going around killing bad guys, right? It's like it's the shit. Ghost, elaborate a little more. You said you liked it yourself. Did you see yourself in the movie? What does that mean?
I did. No,
you kind of look like the more good looking guy.
I saw it probably when I was in the Air Force, out on VHS at the time, or DVD. It flopped in the box office, believe it or not. And for people to kind of hear that now, it's kind of foreign, because it's such a cult classic movie. I mean, I wanted to watch it. I didn't. You usually do on St. Paddy's Day. It's one of the go-to movies to watch. You know, pop in Boondock Saints and Boondock Saints 2. 2 wasn't as good, but it was still good, but it wasn't as good as the original. And it, like Drew said, you could relate to the main characters. You could see yourself, you know, being one of them and trying to clean up the streets that in your town that you see are falling to shit with drugs and everything else, and taking the crime and law into your own hand.
And for a very good reason, Ghost, you said it didn't have the notoriety that it seems to have now post-release. Something very big happened in the United States the year that it came out. That's Columbine. So it was given a limited release in the States because of the Columbine massacre. It was only shown in 5 theaters for 1 week. However, it did later develop that cult classic through the success of DVD sales.
Yeah, dude.
That's crazy. I mean, I didn't realize it came out that right when Columbine happened.
Now, what year was that?
It was 99 the film was made, but it had a limited release due to Columbine, the events of that.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's freaking time, dude. Like the passage of time, as Kamala Harris says, right? It's just nuts to think about. It was that fucking long ago, dude.
Like, it's a lifetime ago, man. A lifetime. Ghost and I were talking about like, pre-show how quickly time flies, and then when you put it in the context of when you first saw a movie, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, dude, like, we're all older than Google. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, that's mind-blowing for...
We're like, that's mind-blowing for, you know, kids these days, right? Kids these days. Like, it's just, you know, this authoritative speaking, or not speaking, but this authoritative entity like Google, and we're fucking older than that damn thing. It's wild.
I grew up learning the Dewey Decimal System in school so I could find books in a library. And I'm like, and I remember at the time, like, I'll never use this, but I never thought that in a million years it'd be something like Google would come along for the reason not to know the Dewey Decimal System or even go to a library basically anymore. I mean, I don't know how it is down in Australia, but you know, you hardly ever, even when my kids were in school, you didn't hear them going to the library. They researched everything on the internet.
Not at all. Every time I hear Dewey Decimal, I can't help but picture some kind of howdy doody Muppet puppet thing in my head.
Well, I know. Hey, and like, guys. Who's Dewey? Who is Dewey?
Wow, they made us learn his name, and I forget it. It was something Dewey, and he came up with this decimal system that classified nonfiction, fiction, and then within that, you know, your way around, almost like an alphabetized, you know, sub-genre group within, you know, whatever. Like, and it sucks.
Sounds like a Mason to me.
Yeah, Freemason nerd. But yeah, so where do we go from here? Like, after you break down the you know, plot of the movie, I mean, people have seen this, right? We don't need to play a trailer.
It's not a brand new film, and nothing should be a spoiler at this point. But I thought I'd give you a little bit of fun. Did you know? Before we get started,
let's do it.
The word "fuck" and any derivative of the word "fuck" is used 246 times in this film.
Fucking what the fucking fuck? Who the fuck? Fuck this fucking. How did you do fucking fucks? Fuck!
Well, it certainly illustrates the diversity of the word.
Wow. Okay.
Was that the most at that time? Because I know South Park did their movie and that broke the record.
I think it might have been at the time, depending on when South Park came out, the bigger, badder, uncut. This probably had the highest at that point. Mark Wahlberg turned down one of the lead roles in order to do Boogie Nights. Could you imagine Mark Wahlberg as one of these characters?
It would have been cool.
Honestly, it probably wouldn't have been as good. It probably wouldn't have been a cult classic, you know what I mean? Because like Boogie Nights, that was a popular fucking movie at the time, right? So good on him for his career, but I don't think it would have been as good, man. You know, you got, I forget the actors' names, but one of them's in the Walking Dead, right?
Daryl Dixon guy, yeah.
Yeah, dude, like that's what makes these cult classic movies. They like, you never see a real like serious cult classic, and I'm probably wrong, but you never see one with like huge actors. And as I'm saying that, From Dusk Till Dawn had George Clooney in it. So, you know, that's kind of a cult classic type movie, but. Yeah, but Pulp Fiction's an actual classic. It's like a bona fide classic, right? True. So,
but it kind of started out as a cult classic. Like, it was one of those movies that a lot of people didn't like, and there was a few people that really loved it, and then it slowly crept into the classic, I think, in my humble opinion.
I think I know what you mean. Like, cult classics, to my kind of definition, they have relatively unknown actors or B-grade actors that this one film can either make or break their careers. And for the most part, these one little classics that go straight to DVD and become huge films outside of cinemas, they tend to do really well and they actually boost the person's profile. We kind of saw that with Boondock Saints, the actors in this. Without that film, I don't think they would have got the roles later on in life that they did.
No, sure. No, the one guy just 100%. Played the guy that was possessed in Nefarious.
That's right.
And
yeah,
I thought he did a great job. And he's older in that movie. I didn't even put two and two together until like someone had told me that, and I went back and looked. I'm like, yeah, that is the same guy. Obviously, he's older because he was really a lot younger. In you know, same with the Daryl Dixon character. I forget his name from The Walking Dead, but yeah, it's crazy. Like,
dude, that's such a cool connection, Ghost. I didn't know that at all. Still, that's awesome.
I thought it was you who pointed it out.
Maybe it was. No, I'm just kidding. No, it definitely wasn't. I didn't know that.
Maybe it was Thomas. I don't know. Somebody did, and I was just like, oh, shit, yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's pretty badass, man. But okay, so more factoids. What do we got? So
two more little factoids. There's a tattoo that Connor has on his left-hand index finger that says Veritas, which is Latin for truth. Murphy, his brother, has a tattoo in the same place, but his says Equitas, which is Latin for justice and equality. Which kind of plays into their characters for this film and pushes them forward a little bit. And the last one, Troy Duffy, his comments, he received a 2-page letter from the Archdiocese of Toronto calling him the spawn of Satan, and that the script for his film was an instrument of destruction to the Catholic Church. So Jeez. The Catholics didn't like him on this one, which was quite interesting.
No. And here's another little fun fact. I did a little homework, not much, Ooh. But I did do a little homework for this.
This is rare, by the way.
Yeah, very rare. The no Catholic church was used in the filming of this. They were all Lutheran churches because the Catholic religion didn't want any part of it. And Brad Pitt also turned and rolled out.
Wow. Brad Pitt and Mark Wahlberg. Now, that's a completely different film. Can you imagine them as brothers? Really,
necessarily turned down, or he was denied because his Irish accent wasn't very good.
Oh yeah, you remember that one he did with Harrison Ford where he was the IRA agent and he came to America? That was a great storyline, terrible acting. He could not do an Irish accent.
He redeemed it though in Snatched when he played the role of a pikey.
Yes, because that accent's so mixed up, it doesn't really, you can't tell what it is, so it kind of works out. Oh, lordy. All right, some name magic entomology type of stuff here. So Connor, so this is one of our main characters. Connor is an Irish male name given from the anglicized compound Irish word, Cochbar, meaning lover of wolves or master of hounds, and is sometimes taken to mean hunter. His brother Murphy is a gender-neutral name in Gaelic origin. This name refers to a warrior of the sea. Their father in this film, spoiler alerts, is called Duke McManus. Duke is a masculine name of Latin origin, meaning leader. And this is the interesting little connection which brings those three together. McManus, as an Irish surname, is derived from the Gaelic word MacManus, which I'm mispronouncing. In modern Irish, McManus, which means son of Magnus, and Magnus in Latin means the great, so both Connor and Murphy are son of the great man, the Duke, the leader. And Connor and Murphy play the roles hunters in this film and warriors going after evil within their society.
The dad's a freaking badass, man.
Isn't he? Billy Connolly, too. Yeah. My favorite comedian. God, what a good role.
And then you got Willem Dafoe in there.
Yeah,
right.
Willem Dafoe plays Paul Smecker, an FBI agent. So Paul is a boy's name of Latin origin, meaning humble. Smecker means leadership. So Agent Smecker is the leader of the investigation. His interactions, however, are far from humble. He flaunts his intelligence as much as he does his homosexuality. He is, however, humbled by his interactions with the McManus brothers, who were able to do what he cannot, which is go after crime indiscriminately.
Yeah, because he kind of, like, later in the film, he kind of, like, endorses what they're doing, right?
Yeah, he flips the switch. He kind of goes, oh, no, why would I bother wasting my life arresting these people when you could just put them in the ground? So it's quite interesting. Yeah. His character progression kind of lines up with his name a little bit. The last one, David Della Rocco, which kind of reminded me of you, Ryan, because, you know, Italians and Greeks and Mexicans are all kind of the same to us white folk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. David is Hebrew in origin, meaning beloved. Della is German in origin, meaning noble. And Rocco is Italian in origin, meaning rest or response. Rocco is a beloved friend, noble in his his loyalty to his friend over his crime family, who repositions his life from one of crime to achieving good with his brothers. That's kind of a little bit of a breakdown of their names. Yeah. Some subtle little winks and nods to their characters' progressions and kind of their role within the films.
Yeah, I love it, man. I think that we should roll into the plot, like how it goes, the progressions of the movie, what like we found in it. I haven't seen it in a little while, but I've seen it, like I said, so many times that I can definitely like probably tell you scene for scene what's going on there. But I always think it's kind of fun to like talk about like what's your favorite scene in the movie. Drew, do you have like a particular scene that you really liked?
I actually like the opening when they're at the bar. So they're finished, they've knocked off work. It's kind of the intro to who they are and sets up the characters. They're at work. They have a couple of tussles with this big dyke who tries to fight them.
Oh, yeah.
They go to the bar at night and they're just drinking with all their mates. And it's just the interactions they have with each other. You got the barkeep who's got Tourette's and fucks up all these sayings and says, like, one in the hand's worth glass houses, or people with stones shouldn't sink ships, or something like that. He mixes his proverbs up. It's just a good, wholesome interaction of like the community town pub. And that comes across.
And they're all busting really each other's balls.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, they're giving each other shit.
Friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that too. Ghost?
I think my favorite, and it's kind of cliche, is when the three of them are standing behind the dude and they're saying the prayer and then just.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. That you're just like, yeah, motherfucker. Yeah.
That's mine. Yeah, it's that's the exact thing, because there's a, before I even watched that movie, I used to be really into like metal, like death metal and like hardcore music, and there was a song that they play that prayer at the beginning of it, right? And they played like that scene from the movie, and I was like, what is that from? And one of my friends was like, oh, it's Boondock Saints. And then that's when I watched that movie on repeat. But yeah, dude, it's just such a hard, it's a fucking hard prayer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like praying and like being God, you know, following God and all this stuff. It kind of gets a reputation of being soft, right? Like they try to tell you like Jesus Christ was real soft and kind of this hippie type. But in reality, you know, it seems like he was kind of a badass dude, you know, flipping tables over and shit. And, that to me, man, it just like, it goes in the face of all of that stereotype of like, if you're praying, you know, you're scared to address things yourself and all this shit. It's just hard, dude. It's a hard ass prayer.
It emphasizes the idea of lambs of God becoming lions, rising up and actually having some backbone and teeth to them. We see it in the start of the film. So they go to a mass, they go to church, and it goes through the basic little prayers like you would see in a Catholic doctrine, like lead us not into temptation, take vengeance upon my enemies, basic kind of scriptural doctrine. But then we start to hear this really interesting story, which is actually based off a real murder that occurred in Boston in previous years, in the 70s, I believe, where a priest is talking about what has happened in the community. We all must fear evil, but there's another kind of evil we must fear above all else. That is the fear of indifference of good men. And it sets the tone for the film that, you know, evil can only succeed if good men do nothing. It really drives home that idea that good men should stand up and do something in the face of evil. And like you said, Ryan, because of that milquetoast kind of idea of Christianity being all loving and accepting all the time, it's kind of nutted Christianity from what it has been traditionally, which is arguably a faith which has, you know, conquered the world, killed a lot of pagan people everywhere, pacified the natives. And now we've gone into this kind of stage where it's very indifferent to all the evils that are going on. But as long as you sit down in your pew and you give your donation into the tithing plate, you're fine.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Ghost, do you think that Christianity kind of has that reputation? Cause you, I mean, I know Drew, you're Christian, right? You lean towards Christianity yourself. Yep. Cause you do the Christian Coalition thing with some of our favorite Christians in the game, Operation Red Pill, right? I lean towards Christianity. I'm much more agnostic than Drew is, from what I've heard from you, Drew. But yeah. Then Ghost, I know that you know, you believe in the creator. We talk about that all the time on Cunt. But like you're very like, would you call yourself agnostic?
Probably no. Yeah, I think that's what I'd probably call myself.
Because, yeah, you like to really poke holes in a lot of the Christianity type stuff. And it's not like you're picking on it. Right. It's just you're a fucking critical thinker, you know, like you, even when it comes to that. So how do you think that this movie kind of portrays like Catholics, because specifically Catholics that we're talking about, right? In this instance.
I think they do a good job portraying it in that sense, kind of like how the mafia, the Italian mafia, brings in a lot of Catholic belief, and even though they're, you know, they're running illegal markets and drugs or whatever.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
family first, they, right? You
know, yeah, the family. But with Boondock Saints, you know, it kind of brings in that whole crusade type of feel, you know, like, okay, it's okay to go on this vengeance spree because I'm doing it in the name of God, and that makes it okay. And, you know, and I'm not saying it, you know, the Crusades or Boondock Saints is right or wrong either way, you know what I mean? But that's just kind of how I felt when I watched it. You know, they're invoking the power of God and Christ to do their work, which they deem necessary and good.
Which ties back to that idea of, you know, what's this, that common saying people say, that God helps those who help themselves. And you can kind of say, see that in these characters. But the irony is that's not biblical at all. That's been an interpretation Christians have applied, which it makes sense. Like, it shouldn't just be up to God entirely. You can't just sit there and keep praying and expecting you're getting it like you're rubbing a lamp with a genie. You have to have some kind of ownership in your life and doing this stuff. Not that I'm suggesting we should go out and try and squash mafias and crime families, not by any means.
Well, I mean, what do you think about doing what these guys do in this movie?
I think every average law-abiding citizen, air quotes, has thought about that at some point. You've sat down, you watch the nightly news, you've seen gangbangers that have done a drive-by, killed some innocent kid, drugs are rampant in your community, and you've heard about a family friend's child who OD'd or something. I think it goes through every person's mind at some point that if only you could deal with these people, because prison sentences don't seem to do anything. I think everyone goes down the route of thinking very vigilante. I think that's why Batman is so appealing in a lot of ways. If Batman killed people all the time, wow, he'd be like the mecca of like anti-heroes.
Well, there's that movie, I'm sorry, were you going to talk to us? Go ahead.
I was just going to jump in. I don't know how it is in Australia. Ryan, I'm sure you've seen them. The bumper stickers that you see on cars, you know, kill your local drug dealer. You know, I see them a lot out here.
Fuck, that'd get me arrested.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, but, you know, and whether they take that, you know, literally, you know, and do something about it is another thing. But I agree with the bumper sticker. Yeah, go kill them. You know, all they're doing is killing kids and other people in your community. Now, granted, this is where I kind of push back that they're making the choice to do it as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is kind of like a Darwinism. I think if you're going to, especially these days when you know that fentanyl could be in any of this shit, it's like, you know, yeah, it's sad, man, when especially like a kid, especially dying, you know, taking something that they don't know. But yeah, dude, like just I've thought about this a lot. You know, I think that pedophiles, I mean, these people can be killed. I think they're broken people. They're simply broken. They can't be fixed. Sentences are getting softer. Another movie that I watched recently that kind of has a similar vibe to this one, I think it was made around the same time, as American History X. I've been watching that movie a lot lately because you go in and you watch it and it's these Nazis. It's bad people. I'm not sitting here for one second trying to stand up for neo-Nazis. So don't mince my words, anyone listening. But they're talking about actual problems that are affecting people that care about their country today. And I'll use the United States, obviously, Drew, you're in Australia. It's probably similar there. There's probably people that are just not invested whatsoever in the benefit of Australia. I know for a fact there's so many people that don't have that are getting benefits and getting help from the government here in the United States that couldn't give a fuck about what happens to the American taxpayer, the American citizen, like the good people. And they're almost getting propped up. And that's what they talk about in American History X. They go in and there's a scene where they raid a grocery store.
And this isn't something that's going on far away. This isn't something that's happening places we can't do anything about it. It's happening right here, right in our neighborhood, right in that building behind you. Archie Miller ran that grocery store since we were kids here. Dave worked there. Mike worked there. He went under, and now some fucking Korean owns it who fired these guys and is making a killing because he hired 40 fucking border jumpers. I see this shit going on and I don't see anybody doing anything about it. And it fucking pisses me off. So look around you. This isn't our fucking neighborhood. It's a battlefield. We're on a battlefield tonight. Make a decision. Are we gonna stand on the sidelines? Quietly standing there while our country gets raped?
Hell no!
Are we gonna ante up and do something about it?
Hell yeah! Hell yeah!
You're goddamn right we are. Oh, you know it's against the law to hire fucking border jumpers, you neck bastard!
That the guy fired a bunch of white people that were working there and hired a bunch of illegal immigrants. You know, they're in California. So they're hiring a bunch of illegal immigrants. So it's a lot of Mexicans that are in there. A lot of black people are in there. And they go in there and they fuck the store up. Now, is that right to do? Obviously not. Drew, you're nodding your head. You're like, yeah, yeah. No, but I know you're just agreeing with what I'm saying. But, like, you know, these guys go in there and like, they're fed up. They're fed up with, like, their own kind, their own people. It doesn't need to be skin color. Your own kind can just be genuinely, like, caring Americans. Right? Or Australians in your case, Joe. And these people are getting the shaft constantly. Like constantly.
Huh? It's the damned if you do. It's the damned if you do, damned if you don't approach. Either you can sit back and watch your country continue to go down the drain with what the choices and things that are happening. But if you stand up and try to push back against it, that's when you get labeled a fascist because the things that you would have to do to rebuild aren't going to be pretty. And I think that's the polar opposites of it. You let things happen and go such a degenerate kind of way. And if you push back in any kind of capacity, everything compared to that is going to look authoritarian in contrast.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I mean, if you had people like, you know, these guys, the Boondock Saints doing this thing, I think it's great killing actual bad people. The fucking law system here, man. And I know it's real backwards in Australia from like, basically you're my source of Australian news, Drew. And I trust your opinion, right? I think if you were an American, you'd fit in a lot with like the conservatives out here. You know, that's just kind of what it seems like to me. And that's the news that I get about Australia. You guys are even possibly more backwards than we are with the freedom of speech, all these things you mentioned that you wouldn't be able to even have that sticker on your car, the kill your local drug dealer, you'd get arrested. We still have freedom of speech out here, kind of. But I mean, if you had people like these guys going out there and actually taking care of business like the way that the law won't, you know, I think that we'd be in a better society. And real quick, I posted this on Instagram. I took it down because I'm trying to push my TikTok a little more. So I posted this on TikTok. And Ghost loves when I talk about TikTok because I've been a TikTok hater. I think TikTok is whack. TikTok is whack. But it's a part of our lives now. Look at that dog.
It's hot dogs here.
There was three cop cars, six cops that went down the street to this gas station by my house to bust an old guy. I don't know if he was homeless or just really, really down on his luck. This guy was selling tie-dye shirts that he made and he was hanging them on the tree outside the gas station. No one complained about this guy, right? Because I was listening to the cops talk with the gas station clerks. No one complained about this guy. The cops were like, do you want us to kick him out? And the people working at the gas station were like, no, he's just out there trying to sell some stuff. Let him, leave him alone. And the cops were like, are you sure? And they're like, yeah, he's not hurting anyone. Leave him out there. He's fine. And then the cops go back out there and talk to him for another 15 minutes. I mean, I was watching a lot of it. And it's like, there's people, like my next door neighbor was fucking murdered. You know what I mean? Like she went missing and then she was killed. Why aren't the cops concerned about that kind of shit? They're focusing on a homeless man trying to sell tie-dye shirts. You know, so the law's a joke. Excuse me, the law's a joke in my opinion. And yeah, if we had some vigilantes like this, I think it'd be beneficial.
And the government always cracks down on vigilantism. They want you to outsource your security and safety to them. A great example happened in Australia, which has become international news: the live stabbing of Bishop Mamari Emmanuel. The Assyrian community kind of took vigilantism into their own hands. They cut the fingers off the guy while he was in there and wouldn't let the police take him out of the church. They caused a little bit of a ruckus outside the church, some protesting, some air quotes, riots that the police kind of incited by pushing a nun. The next day, we had our anti-terrorism police going around to houses arresting Assyrian Christian men for it, sending a very hard message to the Australian population that you do not take things into your own hands or you will be dealt with.
It's disgusting. That's bullshit. That, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, is you're supposed to look after your community, right? Like in the Old West, the Wild West, right? They call it wild because I think there was like probably more order than there is now. So they try to tell you it was wild and it's crazy. But dude, like if someone fucks with like a little kid in your community, I mean, they're going to fucking tie their arms to a horse and their legs to another horse and tell the horses to go opposite ways, right? Like that's what should happen to people, man. And yeah, the whole penal system, I like using that word. They just kind of they go real soft on these guys, man. They give them fucking life in prison. Prison's not that bad for some people. If you figure out how to work the ins and outs, you're getting three hots and a cot like you do in the military, right? Like you get everything handed to you there, right? You just got to kind of deal with being in a small space.
Joe Exotic's doing pretty good.
He seemed like he's in high spirits.
Yeah, I mean, he gets care packages. I mean, he's
well, he's gay too. You know,
yeah, I was gonna say, so he's getting all the gay sex he wants.
Yeah,
that he is. But you know, when we talked to him, he seemed to be doing good and high spirits, and you know, whatever. It's like, you know, he's mastered the system.
Yeah, yeah, man. I mean, you can be a kingpin in there. Someone that's like a fucking loser, mediocre person out here, they can go in there and they can run shit in prison. You know. Not necessarily run it, because I know there's a hierarchy there too. But I mean, you can kind of have it made in there if you really play your cards right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So taking that in mind, these guys taking things into their own hands, the catalyst for these guys becoming vigilantes is their local pub at the start of the film, which is very joyful and a gathering point for their community. It's going to be demolished. And it's being demolished because it's making way for like a big housing estate or multiplex that the Irish mob, the Russian mob rather, are involved with, and they've given this bartender like, you know, you've got 12 days to get out type of a deal, and the time's up. And they show up while they're drinking, having a good time on St. Patrick's Day. So the Irish come in. Chekhov, I think, is his name, the little enforcer for the Russians, comes in, tells him to shut the bar, everyone get the fuck out. And what do the Irish guys do? They try to offer him a drink. It's St. Paddy's Day. Everyone's a little bit Irish. Let's have some fun. And the Russians are really adamant about getting people out. So a big fight ensues, and it's hilarious shit. We see bottles and beer things, canters getting smashed over heads. We see the main guy tied to the bar with his ass lit on fire. Heaps of hilarious things. Like they send them on their way. They kick the shit out of these mobsters, and they think the day is done. They've won. But what happens is they have the repercussions of this. They kind of went through it the average way. The average law-abiding citizen kind of goes, it's Pillsbury rules. You have you dust up your fight, and bygones be bygones. It's sorted. Crime families do the opposite. They will come after you again and again for any kind of reprisal that you've done towards them. So they come after them with guns, and they try to kill them. And this is where the huge kind of cult classic death scene is a part of this. Can you remember that one, Ron?
The death. Oh, yeah, yeah. Where they put the quarters on their head, on their eyes and stuff after they die. Is this what you're talking about?
So, yeah, the first scene where the Russians come after them and they're about to execute Murphy in the streets, and Connor goes all the way up to the roof with a broken toilet and throws it over the edge.
Yeah, because they were locked. Yeah, dude, they were locked up and they chained the one dude to the toilet in his house, right? And then he just freaking... I mean, yeah, that scene where it's like slow motion, he just rips the fucking toilet out of the ground, which isn't as hard as you would think it would be. Toilets are only held in by two screws. I know this because I've been changing my fucking toilet over the last couple of days because the septic system is all fucked up, it seems like. So I've been messing with that. But yeah, dude, I mean, like this dude rips this toilet out and runs up to the freaking roof and just throws this damn toilet, lands perfectly on this dude's head that's about to shoot his brother.
And then he jumps off the roof, landing on the other dude.
Yeah. So he takes out two dudes. He's knocked out on the ground. And Nefarious then, right? It's Nefarious that was about to get shot, mm-hmm. right? So he walks in. Mm-hmm. He kind of nurses his brother back to health. And do they go to the hospital?
I forget. Yeah, they said they leave the crime scene. The crime scene. They go to the hospital, get checked out. They steal the guns and the money and the drugs off the... off the mobsters on the ground, and they kind of go on their way. This is where it pivots to our secondary character of FBI agent Smecker, because they're trying to investigate how these guys died. There's a guy with a burnt ass on the ground with his head caved in by a toilet, another guy who's been stomped on multiple times, and we get this really funny interaction with the typical Bostonian police investigators trying to figure it out. And they're throwing shit against the wall, hoping something will stick. And Smecker comes in all cocky, cock of the walk, and starts to take over. And he has this really weird thing he does. He nails it absolutely. But Angus Day starts playing in his little in his earbuds, and he starts doing his like little flamboyant movements as he's going along to it. But it's quite interesting that Angus Day is based on the saying of John the Baptist, John 1:29, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin from the world." He's investigating a crime that the lambs of God have taken away the sin from. They've killed the sin. And that song's playing as he's investigating it, trying to figure it out.
Wow. Little nuances.
Good shot.
So now the boys, go for it, guys. Jump in.
Oh, I was just agreeing. I was like, yeah, that's good stuff. You know, how he's dancing and what have you, but the little nuances that you know, you're picking up with, you know, the Bible references and stuff. Some of this that you're saying, I'm going to have to go back and watch it again now. Yeah. After hearing these and putting them together, because it's like, oh, shit, you know, because I've always watched it a little tipsy.
Well, that's what you'll see that in a lot of these kind of like movies that become cult classics. There's a lot more thought that goes into a lot of these, it seems like, with you know, some of the higher budget movies and like some of the big Hollywood movies. It seems like people maybe kind of put their own ideas into it and then it holds up. But like some things, like in this case, it seems like there was a lot of thought that went into like each song that played, the words that were said, all this stuff. And I think that's what makes, like, you know, these cult classics really good, dude. Like, so much better than big mainstream Hollywood movies.
I do want to say one thing. And I love this because I think it's pretty accurate on the Irish and or Scottish culture. They're in a pub. They're drinking. Every fight begins with a laugh. Like, it's just going to be a good time, whether they get their ass kicked or they're going to kick some ass. Oh, you want to fight? Fine. Let's have some drinks and let's get it on, you know? And
yeah.
And it ends with a laugh. That's the thing. You can have a punch on with someone. You can have a nose bent to the side, but you'd still be friends afterwards.
Right. It's like, oh, okay.
We've lost that.
Back down and have some more whiskey.
We absolutely have lost that.
Yeah, dude. Like, if you get in a fight on the street or something, like, you got to worry about, you know, three of the dude's friends jumping in or not stopping, like, after you get knocked out and they're just, you know, caving your skull in while you're unconscious. But yeah, man, there's something about just fighting someone, knowing that when it's done. And then you guys can hopefully be friends after that, right? That's why I love MMA, dude. These guys always respect each other for the most part. There's people that sometimes hate each other. No matter what, but they respect each other. They hug, you know, like it's insane. It's insane. Like, they take it too far almost, right? Cause you guys are fighting for, you know, a significant amount of money and your livelihood essentially. But, you know, a lot of these freaking street fights, man, they just get out of hand these days. It doesn't work like it does in this movie.
Not at all. You mentioned the symbolism about, like, the Catholicism in this whole film. It's very Catholic, very Christian undertones for it, naturally. Even when the scene of the Russians' reprisal against them and the brothers pulling the toilet out of the ground so he can go save his brother, as he does that, the crucifix is swinging on the wall behind him as if it's, like, got some kind of supernatural tones to it, that there's some energy in the room going on. So the boys they've killed these Russians. They've gone to the hospital to get some help. They've given their guns, the drugs, the things that they took off the mobsters to the bartender mate to keep it quiet and hold it for them. They decide to turn themselves in. They check with a lawyer. They turn themselves in. At this point, the police are kind of plotting out that this must be a professional hit. It has to be some kind of rival gang. And they're trying to figure out who's done it. And the dumb Bostonian detective goes, "We should just put a potato on the back of a car and drag it down Main Street and say, 'Come out, come out.'" And that's when the boys walk in, and you'd probably do better with beer And the boys just nonchalantly turn themselves in and give their story away to our FBI detective, which he finds quite interesting. He's talking to them and he knows straight away that these boys are actually very well educated. For guys that work in a meat house who live in very poor means, they're well educated and very intelligent.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. It's funny how a lot of their killings and, like, you know, the way that they go about a lot of this stuff, it kind of, like, they plan it out, but nothing goes according to plan, right? And then it just ends up working out really well because, you know, like you said, they're very smart. They can adapt. They can give whatever, like, the situation gives them, or they can take whatever the situation gives them, and they can make it work, man. Like, I don't want to jump the gun, but there's the one scene in the hotel room that I'm excited to get to.
Brilliant one. So they actually end up speaking four or five different languages when they're being interviewed by Smecker. They're talking to each other, and they're trying to keep information away from what do we tell him about what's happened. And they end up speaking Russian, Italian, Gaelic, Latin, and Spanish all within that one conversation. And he's sitting there trying to figure out how these guys who have been brought up in Boston could possibly understand those types of languages so fluently.
So, how is it that you guys are fluent in Russian?
I paid attention at school.
Do you speak any other languages?
Aye, my mother insisted on it.
French?
Comment crois-tu qu'il est tout découvert sans nous en parler?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Non è la minima idea. Forse qualcuno ha visto e ha parlato.
What's that?
It's Italian.
Nicht in unser Gegenmann. Die sind alle 100% irisch. Mit dem Bollen spricht der keine. Basta.
Jawohl.
Entonces quería que le simplemente muy, muy bueno.
What are you guys doing working at a friggin' meat packing plant?
Yeah. The press is everywhere. They're just going nuts for these guys. I don't know what you want to do.
You're not being charged. It's up to you. You want to talk to them?
Absolutely not.
No pictures either. Is there any way that we could stay here?
Yeah. You know, we have an extra holding cell. You guys... Can they stay?
Well, we'll have to check with your mom. But it's okay with me if your friends sleep over. Time to feed the dogs.
And it does. It emphasizes that these guys are adaptable. If they can know all those languages, they can adapt to the situations that are around them. Some people would say that what's happening is divine intervention for the boys because they're such good Catholic boys that what's happening is God's kind of giving them the okay to do these things. But that's what the boys think. The boys think that this is some kind of divine message from God. And we see this in, they stay at the police station overnight. There's a thunderstorm and they both wake up to a crack of thunder. And they're having vivid kind of fever dreams, which they believe to be the voice of God giving them the okay to go out and clean up Boston.
Mm. And clean up Boston they do.
Yes, well, the first thing they do is go to the IRA to get a whole heap of guns. And that reminded me a lot of the commando scene where they're shopping for firearms. And they have this huge, really funny interaction where it's about rope. He grabs some rope off the wall. Oh, what the fuck are you going to need any rope for? And the rope does come in handy, Ryan, as you would know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's my favorite damn scene, dude. It's one of them. I mean, all the cinematics and everything make this movie really good. But, dude, the IRA. I forgot about the IRA. Like, they walk into that massive room of just guns and rope and all these other things, right? Grenades and shit. Badass. I want a room like that.
And weren't the pistols given to them there on the house?
Yeah,
it was clearly. Yeah, they're like, nope, these ones are on the house, boys. They open the box and they're just like looking at them. They have, okay.
Now, did they go into a truck or was it a building?
It was a building, and I think he opened up like a fake wall, and in behind that wall was all the firearms, the IRA flag on the back wall. There was a heavy machine gun at the back, 50 cal.
Irish flag on the stock of the pistols. You know?
Yes.
Badass.
And this is where I think the two mobs, the two main crime families they go against in this film actually represent the institution of church. I think the Russians represent the Orthodoxy as an institution, and the Italians represent the Catholic Church as an institution, whereas the boys kind of, although they are Catholic, air quotes, they kind of go off on their own. They take the word of God and their idea of what the faith is into their own hands, which is something ultimately, like government, the church doesn't want people to do. arguably anyone can stand up and say that the church has always been a system of control. Doesn't matter what they're pushing, it's controlling the people who are part of it. And I think that tells it in this story really well. Like, it portrays these boys as downtrodden Irish people who rise to the occasion, putting evildoers down amongst in their community. But it also happens to be a definition of ethnic groups in Boston. So if you've ever moved to Boston, you know it's highly Irish, with later the Italians that moved in. And what did the Italian crime families do? They took over the Irish crime families. They kind of dominated them, used them as thugs and muscle men. And then we saw later on with the waves of Russians coming in from the USSR and Ukraine, they kind of muscled their way in as well. And the people left at the bottom were the Irish, the nice common people who will let bygones be bygones. They ultimately get dominated by all of these different ethnic groups who come in and don't ultimately share the same values.
This is kind of, highlighted a little bit in Goodfellas, where, you know, what's his name? Ray Liotta's character is part Irish. And you can't rise to the top of like those mafia settings unless you're purely Italian, right? Like, you have to be able to trace your roots back to Italy. They call it the old country. It's just a phenomenal movie too, like the way that they highlight all these things. But yeah, you're absolutely right, man. And I didn't realize too how many Italians ended up in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was mostly Irish, because you know about the Irish footprint there in Boston. But when you think Italian here in the US, you think like New York, New Jersey,
New York,
you know
City.
What I mean?
Jersey Shore.
York City, maybe. What's that? Yeah, Jersey Shore, dude. Don't get me started. Those are the trash people out there. But yeah, man, good stuff.
So it brings us to the boys. They've got the taste for it now. They've been given the okay, the green light by the man upstairs, so to speak. They decide to start to go after other people, and they do that via they have a beeper, like a little messenger, and they get a message from the Russians to meet at this hotel. And they think, beauty, you know, this is, we can take out a whole lot all at once. And they're crawling through the vents and they're doing their action hero type of stuff that they commonly talk about as seeing on TV. And this is where one of Ryan's favorite scenes, one of the most prominent ones in the film, occurs, where they're arguing and fighting in this air duct, and they accidentally fall through the roof in the middle of this meeting, hanging from the rope that somehow hooked itself. And they just pull their pistols out and they start shooting people while they're spinning. Very operatic in its tones and very gymnastics, almost circus-like. But the situation, they adapted to it, and it just seemed to be coincidence they fell through on the right spot.
Yep. Yeah, that, I mean, it's nuts, man. Yeah, you said it really well. Like, they fall down, somehow both their fucking feet get tied in with this rope, and they're the same level. And, it kind of, if you wanted to get real, like, kind of symbolic, or like maybe even a little bit too much, it's almost like they're like an upside down cross, right? Like how they fall down because they're hanging and then their arms are out like that, shooting, kind of like the crab on my shirt, how he's shooting like that, just spinning around like that. You know, it's kind of nuts, man. And that was my favorite. I didn't understand what was going on the first time I saw that. But that's gotta be, I mean, it's top two favorite scenes in that damn movie.
And this is why it's Speckler, the FBI agent, seems to think it's still some kind of a hidden hitman, someone who's been hired by an outside group to go in and after these guys, because they killed 8 men in less than 5 seconds while they're spinning.
Yeah.
It seemed like a perfect hit, like a trained, hardened killer came in, took them all out. It was a hitman. But it's just pure luck that they fell in the right spot, that they got hooked up, and they spun at the right time, both pointing out killing these guys.
Yeah. And then they do the whole Catholic ritual thing too, right? Where they put like quarters on their eyes and shit. It's supposed to be, I think, pure silver that you're supposed to do it with, or is it copper?
I think it's silver. Pennies? I think you put silver coins on the eyes.
And
do you know about
the toll, man?
Yeah. And I want to say it has more of a Roman descent than just Catholic.
Yeah. It's pagan.
More pagan. Roman Empire type ties.
It was supposed to pay the toll, man. So when in Roman faith, to get across the River Styx, you had to pay the toll, and that was 2 coins to pay to get across.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, man. It's cool.
You can learn a lot from a ginger, Ryan.
I guess. Shit. I learn a lot every time we do this. Mostly about names. A lot of good stuff about names.
So the Irish boys have taken out the Russians at this point. They're completely dealt with. The next big hitters in town are the Italians. And this is where their friend Rocco comes into it. Rocco, he's a low-level henchman for the Italian crime family in town. And he's the guy that can give them all the details, give them the ins, the outs, the trackings, the movements of these guys. And he's more than willing to take them out because he's treated like absolute garbage by the crime bosses. And he says a really, really racist but horribly funny joke in this film to the crime boss. Can you remember that one at all, Ryan?
No.
No, I might have to play the clip. I'll put it in this part of the episode, but it's quite hilarious.
All the boys, tell me how you make them laugh when you come around. What a crack up you are. What do they call you?
Funny man.
Funny man. I'm having a shitty day. I'm depressed. Tell me a funny joke.
Now? A joke? A joke. Yeah, all right. There's these three guys. A spick, a white guy, and a black guy.
Ninja.
Yeah. And they walk along the beach. They see this pot. They rub it. Genie comes out. Genie, you know, you can wish for anything you want. So they ask a Mexican what he wants, and he goes, I want all my people in America to be happy and free and in Mexico. And so Genie, poof, all the spicks are in Mexico. And then he asks the black guy.
Nigger.
Yeah, that's what I said. Goes to the nigger, says, what do you want? And he goes, I want all my African, my nigger brothers in America to be back in Africa and happy and everything. You know, so Gene goes, poof. And all the niggers in America are in Africa. And this is going, I'm not funny today, I know. I'm having a hard day. This joke sucks. It's a stupid joke.
Continue the joke.
So the genie says to the white guy, what's your one wish? And the white guy goes, you mean to tell me all the niggers and spicks are out of America? Genie goes, yeah. He says, well, I'll have a Coke then.
Yeah, dude, I do remember that. I didn't remember it was for a Coke, but yeah, I remember like he basically didn't need anything after all the minorities were gone. Hilarious. That's very just funny. Like us whites, huh?
That's yeah, like that's us. It.
We crack just us, hate huh? everyone. Yeah, good shit, dude.
All right, so Rocco joins the fray now. Rocco finds out what the boys have been up to. He helps them out. And Rocco, he ends up doing something that he shouldn't have done. He kills two random little low-level thugs in a cafe, a diner. They're making a joke about him, laughing about him, and he just executes them in broad daylight, no mask on, and pisses off, which throws the investigation out because it's an investigation for Speckler is everything's meticulous, well-planned, looks orderly. This one's just sloppy, and he can't figure out how these are connected, and it's throwing a spanner in his works, which helps the boys out because he doesn't catch on to it's them straight away because of this action. Rocco has to make up for it, and Rocco makes up for it by giving the boys details on some of the higher-end mob bosses for the Italian crime family and tells them where to find them. And that's a strip club called the Sin Bin.
Sin Bin.
The Sin Bin. When they first enter this strip club, the Sin Bin, on the wall it says in words written across the door, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter here." This is a reference to the Divine Comedy. By Dante Alighieri, when the character Dante enters hell in the Divine Comedy, the same words are on the entrance to hell. So it's got a lot of poetic kind of high culture references in this film for something that's ultimately about a couple of drunken Irish brothers from the streets.
Isn't that written on the gates of hell in that?
Yeah, it is in the Divine Comedy.
Abandon all hope.
Yeah, you enter here.
They
makes sense.
They talk about fitting. That. Oh. But, oh yeah, dude, fuck yeah. I mean, they talk about that too in As Above, So Below, another great movie. But yeah, dude, it's a That's like a dark, it's just dark to think like that, right? Like, fucking, anytime you're throwing that above the doors or anywhere, somewhere, like, that's just nasty, man. There is this new movie, too, that came out, kind of going off on a side tangent here. Have you guys seen previous? Huh?
Is it Toy Story?
Toy Story's brand new, dude. Just came out. No. And I don't know if they're even showing trailers for this out in Australia, but it's a movie where it's like an old 60s talk show, and they do
it's on,
like,
Shudder.
Yeah, dude. And they do like an exorcism. Have you seen that one yet, Ghost?
I seen the previews. It keeps popping up on my beloved TikTok.
Watch it, dude. It's fucking trippy. It's creepy. Creepy, creepy movie. But yeah, like, just all that demonic and that devil shit if you really pay attention to it, it gets scary, man. Like, you can think about it as like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, a story or whatever, but the esoteric and, like, kind of like the undertones of all of it are just terrifying, dude, if you really pay attention. And yeah, I don't know what made me think of that, obviously just the abandon all hope line, but fucking terrifying.
Did anyone notice that Ron Jeremy, aka the Hedgehog, was one of the muscle men for the Italians? And this is the guy they kill when he's getting a peep show. They wait for the little mirror to come up and they just execute him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why he was in that at all. He doesn't strike me as a muscle man or anything, but I guess he's got a huge dick, so that's probably why. That would make him intimidating to some people.
I don't think he was known for a big Johnson. He was more known to be able to finish on command.
Right, but he still had, I mean, respectable.
It was average. He wasn't John Holmes big.
No. Well, that's your favorite, huh?
Trust me, I watch my penis size.
reference material, nothing else.
Right. Scientific purposes. Yeah, to be honest, I haven't even seen Ron Jeremy's schlong, but I've just always heard that it was massive. But yeah, I didn't know that he could come on cue.
Gross.
So.
Utterly gross. So the boys execute a couple of the Italians in the room, and then Rocco wants his taste. He's begging to have a go. So he ends up shooting wildly, firing multiple shots across the room, into the walls, multiple parts of the body, killing a couple of people. He does his job. And again, this throws a spanner into the works for the investigation of an FBI agent. He sees the meticulous killing of the boys, and then he sees the prey and spray approach of just shooting everyone, hoping you hit something. So he now knows that someone else is mixed into the fray, that there's more than two people playing this game now. And the boys start to garner the attention of the Italians now. They've taken out the Russians, their competitors, which they weren't too worried about at the start, but now some of their own are being killed. So the Italians call on the help of their greatest hitman, the Duke, which is currently in prison awaiting parole, who is played by one and only Billy Connolly.
And yeah, obviously we kind of alluded to the twist there. And people know, you know, if you, this is an old movie at this point, this is the guy's father, right? Like he's meant to go out there and basically kill his sons. And he finds out later, obviously that's towards the end, but yeah, man, kind of, that's only shit that happens in movies. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Let's hire the boy's father to kill them.
And
he's still alive, by the way.
Billy?
He's 81 years old.
Yeah, he's got some health issues going on, but he's still kicking. Bless him.
All that matters.
Patron saint of Scotland, that man. And ironically, he's actually Irish, not Scottish. His parents are Irish immigrants to Scotland, and he grew up in Scotland. There we go. So he's now going after the boys. He's the hitman. And we see the first interaction. The boys attempt a hit on one of the Italian crime bosses in the back room. Rocco fucks up, and there's this tussle and a fight that goes on where he has to cave the guy's head in with a pool ball. They leave the house, and they're confronted by the Duke. And the Duke has got this comical amount of pistol strapped to his chest, plus two in his hands. And there's this shootout in the street. Couple of the boys get hit. Rocco loses a finger in the ensuing fight. And the boys are on the run now. They know that the mob's after them, and they've got a hitman that's coming on their coattails pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, I think that they all get hit, right? And then, yeah, Rocco loses the finger, and they throw a bunch of ammonia all over the yard to throw the cops off, which I thought, I mean, that's genius. I don't know. I forget how they just had ammonia on them. Maybe they went back in the house and got it. But, yeah, I guess if you're planning on getting in a gunfight, definitely throw ammonia on the blood, because it makes it so that the blood, you know, however they would match your DNA, it would fuck that up, basically.
Rocco's the one guy that ruins it for them again. He shot a finger, gets used to ID him. They take the fingerprint of it, and Smekler just goes through, he's like, he has flashbacks of seeing Rocco bring the boys some clothes at the police station earlier on in the film, and he makes the connection that it is the boys. The boys have been doing this all along, and they've let this complete shit kicker come in and kind of ruin it for them. He's sloppy at best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is. And you can tell, dude, like the way, like, you know how they have like these buffoon characters in movies every once in a while? That's kind of what Rocco always was, right? Ever since he got in. He accidentally shoots that cat.
Right? Yes.
And he's like, yeah,
he bangs the table. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Kills the cat, explodes it.
Yeah. And he's now, like, what the fuck just happened?
Now that you mention that scene, it just clicked on me. I think in the original Deadpool, when he goes in the bathroom where he's delivering the pizza before he's Deadpool, and he's like, well, whose cat did I kill? I think they were referencing back to that.
That good connection.
I like it.
Films,
well, we brought you on, Ghost.
What's that?
No, I said that's why we brought you on.
Oh, yeah, for the, making for those, the dumb shit.
Those hard-hitting Deadpool connections.
Yeah, dude.
So the boys now, they're kind of forced. The hitman's forced their hand. They have to take out the hierarchy of the crime family. So they try to sneak into the mansion of this crime boss, the Don, and they get caught in doing so. And as they're caught, they get tortured. They're in the basement, and they start cutting Rocco's fingers off as a bit of torture. Ultimately, Rocco ends up dying. They shoot him, and the boys, you think it's the end. They're going to die. But this is when we have our epiphany moment for Smekler, our agent. He gets drunk and decides that, you know, I can't possibly just keep doing what I'm doing, arrest people and have them go out on the street. I have to do what these guys are doing. And for whatever reason, he decides to dress and drag as a prostitute and then knocks on the door, which is by
any
far
excuse you can find.
The most horrifying right. visual I've ever seen in cinematic history is Willem Dafoe as a tranny.
Yeah, it's rough.
That is a huge jawline.
Turned on.
A little bit of a chub there, Ghost.
Yeah, very square jaw for a female. Almost like Michelle Obama's, someone say.
So this is Smekler ends up saving the day in a lot of ways. He comes in disguised as the prostitute, making out with a guy at the door. The guy sees that he's packing heat both ways. He gets shot. He kills a couple of the guys in the low levels, and the boys end up escaping. They break the chairs. They get out. He breaks his hand, wrist, or whatnot to get out of the chair, and helps his brother get out. So Connor and Murphy are now out. They've escaped. And there's a big time jump. Our agent lets the boys go. He decides he doesn't want to pursue them, doesn't want to arrest them because they're ultimately doing good. And we see this in the final scenes of the film where even the Boston police force from the precinct that arrested them at the start, they are helping out at the court hearing for this mob boss to decide whether he goes to prison or not. They let these men into the court with their father. So the Duke now is with the boys, all three of them. They come in live on television, claiming to the world that they are going to clean up the streets of Boston and save the people. And that's when you get that great scene where all three of them are behind the guy on his knees. They go through their family prayer and they execute.
Badass. Yeah, it's fucking badass. Good movie, dude. I mean, it's just one of the best. Was there any, I forget, was there any like bonus Easter egg kind of like scenes after the credits in this one?
I don't believe so.
I'm trying to remember for sure.
I don't remember any.
No, okay, yeah, I'm probably totally off, but I you know how they used to do that with a lot of those where just like, you know, you keep watching, there's a little extra on top. But yeah, man, one of the best movies, dude. But what else, like, what other movies came out around that time that just, like, stood out to you? 99, you said?
Yeah, 99, jeez. Boogie Nights was a big one around that time. Like you said, Mark Wahlberg actually made a good choice for his career. That was an instant classic. This went under the radar. The I don't Matrix. Know. Yeah, The Matrix was huge. Now that you mention it, there was one small little kind of cutaway during the credits, and that was a news reporter interviewing people on the street. What do you think about the Saints of Boston?
Right, right.
Yeah. And it's the conversation around vigilantism that everyone has. Oh, you can't do that because it's up to the police. You just can't do that, take things into your own hands. It's illegal, blah, blah, blah. And you had people, oh, they're doing the right thing. They're saving the community. They're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Those types
of conversations. Yeah, I mean... That was a perfectly well done representation of that too. Hey, okay, so look, check this out. Best movies of 1999 include Fight Club, okay, phenomenal. The Matrix, as you said, Office Space, The Sixth Sense. Sick. I mean, this is a golden era.
American Pie.
American Pie came out in 99.
The Three Kings. Dude. That was a big year for Wahlberg.
Dude, The Green Mile, Eyes Wide Shut, Toy Story 2, Election. You remember Election with Reese Witherspoon? Phenomenal.
I mean, Ghost, your favorite, Runaway Bride, came out that year.
Oh, yay.
South Park, the movie, Bigger, Louder, and Uncut. Good stuff there. I actually just watched, too, speaking of South Park, I watched Beavis and Butthead. I saw this for the first time, Beavis and Butthead Do America. And what a fucking movie that is.
That was your first time?
Yes. I've watched the show countless times, but holy shit, they have Robert Stack. Robert Stack, the guy from Unsolved Mysteries, is like the head ATF agent, and he just loves cavity searching people. A phenomenal movie, man. So and good.
They looked at toads out in the desert.
Well, no, it was they ate peyote.
Oh, yeah, it was peyote. Maybe it was an episode I'm thinking that they licked the frogs.
Yeah. I mean, just 90s TV and movies were, I mean, high level, dude. High level.
Now that you're speaking of classics that kind of went unnoticed at the time, 8mm came out in 99 as well.
Very good movie. Nicolas Cage, correct?
Yes, Nicolas Cage. Snuff film. And he's investigating it. Wow, huh. That was a big year. I'm just looking through these as well. That is a big year for films.
What yeah, man. I mean, that... 13 Monkeys.
That would have been...
Oh, I'd be very close.
Around the same time, I think. Very close. Within a year or two, I would think.
Yeah, I'm happy, too, with 99, with Eyes Wide Shut, man. That is a phenomenal film. I mean, we need to do a Kubrick film review here. I mean, a lot of people have done that, though, so maybe not, but... yeah, man, just the 90s. Guys, they don't go on.
No, I was just gonna, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But have you guys done The Crow?
We have not done The Crow. Brandon Lee.
That's a cult classic in certain genres. People,
well, just the conspiracies around his death and his dad's death, too. You know what I mean? Like they both got killed the same way, you know, pretty much.
And if we do that, though, we're gonna need you as a guest. And we need you dressed up as the crow with the makeup and everything.
I haven't done that.
Yeah, a sexy crow.
Sexy crow. One thing you're forgetting.
Dude, you went as the crow in high school for Halloween?
Yeah.
Do you have a photo of that?
Oh, I don't. I wish I did.
Dude, that is so gay. They made fun of this in South Park, dude. The devil. Yeah,
well, we talked about it on Cunt.
Yeah, I know, but I forgot. The devil went as the crow in South Park, and he was pissed off because, like, someone else was dressed up. And he's like, no one can look hotter than me. And it's like, you know, he's just dressed up as the crow, dude. That's so funny, man.
Who's the big actor that just got released of all charges from that shooting?
Alec Baldwin.
He's an asshole.
Eric Bergman.
The girl that was the ammunition specialist or whatever. Her father, I believe, was the one who worked on the set of The Crow as well.
Sounds like an organized family. Hitting people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. She had ties to the Clintons, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of weird. You know what I mean? But whatever. Hey. I mean, Alec Baldwin probably just was like, I want to shoot someone today. Just a fucking douche. Okay. What an asshole. And then Justin Bieber is dating married to his daughter.
Just know he was sitting in his trailer going, I hate that fucking bitch.
I hate that.
As he's loading the live round into the gun.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about Bieber. Yeah, dude. Yeah, he definitely wanted. I think he wanted to kill her. But, hey, it's neither here nor there.
Yeah. Bieber and Jalen Smith, they like to get pretty touchy-feely with one another.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of that weird stuff with all those guys, man. A lot of weird shit going on. But, yeah, I mean, a nice little in-depth research there, Drew. You always are the one that really kind of brings the hard-hitting information. Bob and I usually are at the peanut gallery, but now we have Ghost filling in for Bob, and it's a fun addition, I think.
Yeah, this was good, man. So what are your ultimate thoughts of this film, Ghost? What are your takeaways from it? What is the messaging for you? What is it kind of trying to communicate?
What I always took away from it was kind of, we touched on it in the beginning, you know, it's the whole why people are attracted to Batman. You know what I mean? Like, it's that vigilante, you know, it could be my neighbor next door, you know, cleaning up the streets. You just don't know, you know what I mean? Or I could actually do that. So, you know, you kind of walk away almost feeling empowered. You know what, if shit's going down in my streets, I can clean it up. You know what I mean? I just need me and a really good friend or a brother, you know, or, you know, whatever. And let's go rain hell down upon these junkies and crime families. And I don't know, just always a good film. You know, you walk away at the end, you're just like, you know, the bad guy's lost and it's not a good day to be a bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, dude. I'll also, like, I think that that's a good message of the movie. I think the moral of the story is, like, as corny as it sounds, it's fight for what you believe in. I think that it's stand up for what you believe in. I think that's what the moral of the story is. I think that's a feeling that you get from the movie is like, yeah, I can go and I can fuck up, you know, bad guys in my neighborhood or in my city or whatever. But I think that the moral is stand behind what you believe in 100% because, you know, these guys are Catholics. They're paying tribute to that constantly. I'm not a fan of Catholicism personally. I don't think that they should be fucking, you know, killed or anything, but I'm not a fan of the ideology of Catholics specifically. Nothing against them. Again, can't stress that enough. But these guys are just like they're taking their highest beliefs, their highest form of belief, which is their version of God, and they're tying that into everything that they do. And they believe in what they're doing. They're not second guessing themselves. They do a little bit in the beginning, but then they get that divine message. And I think that it's everyone has a purpose in this world, and B, stand up for what you believe in. I think those are the morals of this story, personally.
Throw into that to kind of bring it together. The cherry on top, I think, is not waiting for other people to do it for you. And we kind of discussed that as society's gotten that way now. We're very much reliant on the system. You know, the police are there for our safety. The government makes sure that rules and balances and checks and balances are there to make sure crime doesn't exist. And if it does, you know, police will take care of it. Ultimately, we know that really doesn't work. The system is said to be one thing, but it allows a lot of stuff to happen. And the boys as characters for this film, they're the mechanism which shows that sometimes you do have to be in it for yourself. You stand up for what you believe in, your morals, like you said, Ryan, and you have to do things yourself. And ultimately, the church in this and the crime families, they represent the authority that's supposed to be doing that, but it isn't doing it. So the boys have to do it.
Yeah, they're sitting on their asses, you know, and they're incompetent. I mean, it shows the incompetence of some of the police, right? There's the one ringer cop, and he's a fucking, you know, sexual freak, right? And it's not because he's gay. It's because the way he's gay. It's, you know what I mean? Like, it's different just being gay and being normal, whatever. But, like, this guy's wild. And I love in the one scene where he calls that guy a fag. When he's like, get out of here, fag, right? When
what the fuck are you doing? I'm just trying to cuddle. Yeah. What a fag.
Yeah, dude. So, you know, he seems like he would be a cool dude, but he's also, you know, kind of a delinquent freak. But they show the just complete incompetency of police officers. And in that case, I think they were feds of some kind. Were they FBI?
Willem Dafoe was the FBI who was working on behalf of the Bureau to help the police in Boston because they couldn't solve it. Yep.
Well, so that just goes to show, you know, these low level cops, average everyday cops, like the ones that I saw arresting a homeless guy, trying to arrest a homeless guy for selling T-shirts. These guys have, I mean, they're very kind of incompetent people, man, you know, and then they bring in someone that's like more skilled in their department. And he's like a J. Edgar Hoover, right? He's a guy that wears high heels and makeup and shit in his free time. So, you know, do whatever you want behind closed doors. I'm not shaming people. No kink shaming on this show. But, I mean, geez, just higher levels of society, man. You see that shit a lot. And I think that, you know, that's kind of another thing that they wink at there in the movie.
Do you think a good analogy is the trolley thing where you go to your shopping center or the mall and there's trolleys that are just sitting there in the car park and either you can put it away yourself or you can just leave it there?
Oh, the
trolley.
Shopping cart.
Sorry. That's Australianism. Shopping cart analogy. So you either put the shopping cart back, you leave it in the parking lot, or if you arrive there and you see it in the parking lot, do you put them away if you see them? Or do you leave it up to someone else to do it because it's their job?
I've put some away before. Yeah, I always put my own away, 100%. I mean, it just shows the quality of person that you are. If you just leave it, I think that's really lame. Now, there's a lot of like these alpha male types out there that make that way too big of a deal. Always put back the shopping cart. I get it. But what if you're in a hurry, big time, and you're like, man, I always put my shopping cart away. I got to fucking go. I'm not walking this thing back. I get it. I understand. I used to work in grocery stores, not at a grocery store, but I was around that stuff. And I'll always put mine back. I've even put some other people's back before. Like if there's one just in the middle of a spot, I'll put it back. There was one that was flipped over in a parking spot and I pulled in and no one parked in that spot. And all that I did, I kind of felt like a dick. I just dragged it into the next spot so I could pull out straight instead of having to back up. So it was like ultimate laziness. But yeah, man, I mean, like, yeah, put the shopping cart back. Don't be a douchebag. But also, you know, people build personalities around that. You know what I mean? Put the shopping cart back. And there's even a channel with like this big Russian guy where he like intimidates people that don't put the shopping cart back and like stands behind their car and shit. It's like, I get it. You know, just kind of, it's not that big of a deal. There's much more important things than putting a shopping cart back.
The one that grinds my gears is when you see people, there's a shopping cart or a trolley already in a parking spot and someone else comes and puts their cart in that one. And then just becomes like an unofficial shopping cart, like station. That's what grinds my gears.
Yeah, because then, yeah, you're creating work for these poor people that are way underpaid. But yeah, dude, there's all kinds of little things like that in society, man, like tipping. You know, my big thing, I used to work in restaurants a lot before I, you know, started, you know, doing other shit. But my first 15 jobs were restaurants. And my big thing is when customers don't put their plates, like they don't stack their plates nicely for you. I always do that. Like I, you know, people will just leave a fucking mess. I have this thing. I've done it while I'm sitting here. I'll take a napkin and like when I'm talking, I'll just like rip it into tiny pieces. You know what I mean? It's a weird like autistic thing that I have. We're all like, or I'll take a label off a beer bottle and just like shred it into tiny pieces. But I always pick that up and I throw it in like my cup or something so that they're not having to fucking clean all that stuff up. But yeah, man, like just clean up after yourself. You're a fucking adult, you know? If you piss on a toilet seat in a public bathroom, right? If the urinals if the urinals are taken up and you have to go into the shitter to take a piss, clean up your piss. You know what I mean? Like it's a lot of times it's an old person that's retired and they're just working a little bit because this fucking economy is a wreck. So they're working a little bit on the side just to get some fucking, you know, grocery money. Clean up after yourself. It's nuts that, you know, a lot of functioning adults don't do that. And I've been accused of being autistic and I can do this shit. Okay. So
they're going to call you the Arizona anarchist and you're going to be like stalking public toilets. And if there's piss on the seat, you're going to, go after people vigilante style. Did you piss on that seat?
I'll go Boondock Saint style on these motherfuckers. I will straight up fucking shoot them when they're walking their kid out to their car. I'm just kidding. I will not do that. But I mean, like, just to me, it's a pet peeve, man. You can fucking clean up after yourself.
Yeah, I do the same thing at restaurants. You know, I always stack my plates, kind of pre-wipe the table a little bit, you know, and just common courtesy. And when I take the buggy back, shopping cart or trolley, whatever you call it in your place of the world, when I get to the corral, if there's just like two in there and they're barely bumping, I push them all the way in so it forms the caterpillar. Just because the grocery store that I go to, they hire special needs people, and they're the cart, they bring in the carts and what have you. And I always just try to make it a little easier on them.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything to be nice, does it, guys? Manners are free, man.
Yeah, it's free. Goes a long way.
I told Ghost the other day, I went to go get some wings and pizza out here at this place, and there was a disabled biker gang, and it was wild. I'm not making it up. They weren't a gang, but they had their matching vests. There was a poor little guy with Down syndrome that was, he rode in like the back of one of these guys' bikes. But, there's like deaf people, blind people, just all disabled people in a biker gang. And I was telling Ghost, I was like, it's really nice and it's sweet that these people have like a spot, right?
I don't mean to laugh, but I just imagine that Down syndrome biker guy stomping someone, gutter stomping them like American History X.
Yeah, curb stomp them. Yeah, dude. I mean, like I said, it's beautiful. It's so nice that they have a place, but I can also laugh at it. I'm not going to make fun of them to their face. We'll do it on a show that thousands of people listen to, but I'm not going to make fun of them to their face. But dude, it was such a sight to see. It was hilarious, man.
Not laughing at them as individuals, laughing at the context in which they were seen.
Well, yeah, and the movie, I went and I got some vodka tonics while I was waiting for my pizza and wings and stuff, and just going out and seeing these guys, and they're trying to act tough because they've seen the movies and stuff, Sons of Anarchy and shit like that, and they're just sitting there with their black vests on, this Down syndrome guy's got his arms crossed, and it was just hilarious, dude. But again, I can't stress how nice it is. It's a very nice thing that they had a place to feel empowered.
Can you imagine someone overtook their little group of bikes on the road and they follow the guy to like a petrol station and then they beat the shit out of him because he overtook them? Down syndrome guy's like, this is what we do.
Well, dude, those guys can fight, man. Like, they don't have like good technique, but I mean, you need a 2x4 to knock one of these guys out, and they're strong. They're very strong, Down syndrome especially. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of a terrifying concept, like in theory. That you piss off a Down syndrome biker gang or whatever. But
I had to fight a kid with Downs once.
You fought a kid?
Yeah, it was when I was taking
Were you dressed as the Crow when it happened?
No, this is way before the Crow came out. I was still in elementary school, but I was taking martial arts classes, and there was a kid with Downs in it. And we were both white belts starting out. Well, at the end of the night, you always sparred or kumite'd with like belts. Well, the teacher thought it was a good idea for me to go up against this guy, right? Well, like Ryan said, they come at you full strength. I mean, they're not, they don't know the concept of holding back. I was running around that little circle for my life. Yeah. Cause he was swinging. If he would have connected, I mean, he would have broke my cheekbone, my jaw or whatever. And
so you lost. Short,
yeah. I was running for my life, bro. I was like, no. Cause I would watch him. And if he couldn't get down, what they were teaching, he'd fucking get all ragey and just want to fucking Hulk smash shit. I'm like, I'm good.
I'll lose this one. Yeah, that's a lose-lose situation, stepping into, square up with a retarded person. That's a lose-lose. It's as bad as fighting a girl. You know what I mean? Yeah. In a mixed martial arts class or martial arts class. You don't win that battle.
No, you don't. You're rough.
But yeah, again, I'm not making fun of it. It was just hilarious. I can't stress, because like one of my ex-girlfriends, her brother had Down syndrome, and it affects the parents, man. It's a tough fucking thing. Like, it's very, very hard to basically have this person that is going to depend on you forever, and you're going to die before them for the most part. So, I mean, that's a tough, tough thing. But we can laugh a little bit about the situation. You know what I mean? Biker gangs. Come on. We can laugh about that. It's not malicious.
I find when you talk about people, when you talk about Down syndrome people, it's almost like the analogy of little kids. You kind of see them in that same kind of light. When a little kid swears, it's funny. When a Down syndrome person does something, it's funny. You're not laughing at the person or their disability. It's just the situation and the things that they do.
Yeah, imagine like a little kid biker gang. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. I'm not I try to be, you know, very sensitive to people that are born with things that they can't control, but god damn, it was funny. It was hilarious to see.
Theo Von did a little I don't know, episode where,
yeah,
where
cooking,
he was
show.
Cooking in a kitchen. Yeah, with two Down syndrome kids there. I think they were Asian.
Yeah.
Now that's a different one. You don't tend to see Down syndromes of other races that often, do you?
There's black ones. That was what? My ex-girlfriend was black. Yeah, my ex. I saw this meme too, where it was a black retarded guy, and he was acting really hood. And the caption was, "Oh, they have gangster ones too." And this guy was, you know, just a Down syndrome dude, and he was like drinking. He was doing hand signals like that, and so it was funny, dude. Yeah, they come in all sizes and races and beliefs and all that shit, man. Good stuff.
Hashtag not all Down syndrome.
Yeah. It's great,
Ghost,
dude.
Thanks for joining in today, mate. We appreciate you filling in. It's a great conversation. Where can people find your work, brother, if they're not familiar with you at all?
You can find my work anywhere you get a podcast, patreon.com/mythirdeyepodcast. Sign up over there. Also, if your listeners are new to me, which I doubt you would be, but you know, Ryan and I do a weekly news show called the Conspiracy Underground News Team. We drop it every Tuesday. We try to go live on Sundays here on Eastern Daylight Time, Daylight Time now, here in America. But yeah, it's a fun show. We try to go live, get interactions, and I know Drew, you pop in there on time to time, and you know, it's kind of hard to see the comments on X and what have you. But man, we just have a good time with it and just get silly. But you know, I'm all around, always available for episodes and collaborations.
Fantastic. Shameless little self plug here. I've taken a leaf out of Ryan's book with shirts and merch and stuff. I've built a merch store, and over my Easter break, I made a stupid amount of designs for my podcast. Some pretty cool stuff out there, guys. Check it out. Yeah. If you want to support the show, you know that I don't actually charge for any of my content, but if you do want to support the show, I'd prefer that you got something out of it. So I think the merch store is a good happy medium there, where you'll get yourself a shirt, a poster, stickers, what have you. Check it out. See if anything tickles your fancy.
Do your products ship out of the United States or out of Australia?
Out of the United States, I believe. That's Fourthwell, so it's American-based, which is good for Americans. The pricing's very good for you guys. Unfortunately for my Australian listeners, I will admit it's a little bit steep, so I'm trying to put some things together in the background so the same merchandise is available for Australians at a better price for us, because, you know, that exchange rate is a killer down here.
And because Drew's a nationalist.
And I'm an extreme nationalist.
And you Aussies out there, don't worry, we support you as well, because we're all sitting here behind Rode microphones and Rodecasters, which is made right there in Australia.
Right there in the good old down under. Yeah, man, that's something that you ought to really tell your audience a lot every time you mention your store, Drew, because I guarantee you have 90% of your audience is probably out of the United States, and they would assume, like I just assumed, that your shit's being shipped out of Australia, and that's going to be very expensive for your American audience. So yeah, man, every time, you know, let them know that it's shipped out of the United States. Shipping is very cheap.
Yes,
for your American listeners.
It is cheap as chips for Americans. I noticed the last two orders were from the States, and I was honestly gobsmacked at how much your postage is over there compared to ours. So,
I
yeah,
feel like you just
jump
put
on
a curse on me. What the fuck is gobsnapped? What is that?
Gobsmacked, shocked.
Oh, wow. I feel like you just called me like a racial slur or something. I'm like, what is he saying? yeah, man, no, that's awesome. And the designs are great. I love the, cryptic ones, like the cryptozoology ones. Those are phenomenal. So yeah, stay on it. I'd give your character a bigger beard, you know what I mean? I'd give him a bigger beard. That's the one thing I would do with the
character. I'll take that on notice.
The only thing I have left to say for the Australian audience and your audience over there, Drew, is shooey shooey shooey.
Oh yeah. And thongies. You ever done a thongy?
I've not done a thongy. An American thongy will probably get you pink eye, because it's a very different thing over there.
Yeah, well, we used to call them thongs in like the 90s, you know, so, but yeah, thongs.
Oh, you're like talking about like a flip-flop.
Yeah, you use a flip-flop to chug it. People do that all the time, but Yeah, okay. It's chewy. It's fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
That's rough, dude.
They're weird over there. They're weird down there.
We're not weird. You're weird. Who doesn't drink out of shoes, honestly?
Yeah, I mean, I like the boot, Das Boot. That's pretty cool. That's a fun thing. But yeah, not into drinking out of shoes. And then really what you're supposed to do is hawk a loogie into the show and then chug it, right?
Pretty much.
For the shoey?
No.
Have you? No?
No.
That's what Tai Tuivasa does.
Well, that's a bit strange. You do not hawk a loogie into your shoey. That's disgusting. That's too far.
Yeah, that's what Tai Tuivasa does. He's a like an Islander type dude, Samoan type dude. So, I mean, they get a little crazy with that shit. But yeah, fun times here on the Conspiracy Theater 3000.
That it was, gentlemen. And on that note, we shall catch you all next time.
Game over, man. Game over. What are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do? No! Get to the chopper!
No! God, please, no! No! No!
You don't approve? Well, too bad.
Let me beg here, but I will do it.
We'll keep going. You want another one? Say the word. Just say the word. Yes. You got it. You got another one right there. That's another one, pal.
Wow! Ah, so happy. I can't even feel my arms.
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.